I'm joined today with Nish Ayub, a finalist of the 80th Anniversary Initiative of the International Visitor Leadership Program. Nish is from Malaysia and is a prominent transgender activist who co-founded the SEED Foundation and Justice for Sisters. Nish, I know it's been a very turbulent time, a lot of uncertainty going on with our current pandemic, and I just want to thank you for the time you've taken to talk with me. My first question I want to ask is, from my understanding, the Justice for Sisters is a foundation that's focused on activism politically, and the SEED Foundation is doing some more charitable work within your community. Would that be a fair description of those two organizations?
Yes, and I just want to clarify, Justice for Sisters, we are actually a group. We are a group of people that's working towards legislation of transgender people. And SEED, basically, we are a registered organization. We are a non-government organization.
Mm-hmm. And then, so what specific policies are you advocating for within the Justice for Sisters group?
So basically, it started on reforming the law, which is in a state called Negeri Sembilan. And we were basically challenging the Sharia law, which is by for cross-dressing. And that is one of the work that we have started with. And it took us just like nearly 6 years, actually, from 2010 to 2015.
And so for those who might be unaware, how has Malaysia been changing in the recent decades that has really put a toll on LGBTQ rights in Malaysia?
Sadly, because the LGBT issue here in Malaysia has always been politicized, both from the political sector and even from the religious sector. And we always been used as either as a scapegoat or either as a reason to gain vote. As you're aware, you know, Malaysia political system is always related with religion, right? And it's most probably to gain votes. Eventually, we become those targeted point where it is difficult because even though we brought this to the court, I was basically given the Woman of Courage Award and everything, right? Mm-hmm. But eventually, locally, they do not recognize the LGBT people. And we have been getting tremendous backlashes, either from the government nor from the religious perspective.
So with that context and that historical understanding, how did you being involved in the IVLP program in the U.S., how did that kind of shape some of the positions and things you're advocating for today?
Okay. I must say, after attending the program itself, right, and after getting recognition itself from the state, I've noticed that it has opened a lot of doors for me, and it has given me a kind of networking where I get to network not just from our local allies or our local stakeholders, but even from international and also regional. And it has created me a platform where I'm able to voice out my issues, where I'm able to even get, even locally, I managed to get support from the embassies here, including the EU embassies, the US embassy, and most of the time, it has actually given me space also in the media, in the mainstream media, right? And not just that, right? Because of this experience in IVLP itself, I have so managed to engage with the Minister of Islam, Minister of Islam, which is for the previous government, and then to talk about the trans issue. And it was basically on the mainstream media, and eventually it did not came out good. But at the same time, it created discussion, both from the public, both from the politicians, and both from the religious sector. So I must say, what I've learned and my exposure through the program has actually give me, how do you call this, give me that courage to basically be on that platform, and has actually created more platform for me where I'm able to actually advocate on the rights of the community. Because of the IVFP program, where I managed to actually go to San Diego, and I met the San Diego team, San Diego Pride, I'm sure you know them.
Yes.
Right? So they have managed to open doors for me, whereby the next thing I know, when I came back to Malaysia, I had someone, because they did not mention who was that, who was basically following my work, and he actually donated $5,000 to the work that I do, and I used that money to actually open the first ever transgender elderly home in Malaysia. So I must say I'm so thankful to the San Diego Pride to actually help us to open the first ever elderly home where most of the time they are forgotten, and now I have nearly 30 people that came in and out to the home, after the home, and it's still today here because of them. So thank you so much to the San Diego Pride. Because of the recognition, where I had even a day for 5th of April, I can't remember the year, but it was 2016, I think. 2016 was San Diego made a day of me, and that was something that, that recognition itself, and getting to be a part of the International Women of Courage Award, has tremendously helped not just me, but even the community here in Malaysia, to be recognized being as as our identity. At the same time, we have created a lot of publicity which I needed to actually create awareness for the rights of the community here.
In Malaysia currently, is there anything going on that is signaling any possible changes in LGBTQ rights, for better or for worse?
Okay. Currently, I would say it's okay. How do I say this? Even though with the new government, and now we have another new government, right? Eventually, I've noticed that most of these politicians in our government who don't want to talk about the rights of the LGBT community, because it's a very for them it's a very sensitive issue when it comes to religion. So I do not see anyone that is able to actually bring up this matter rather than the activists themselves here. So it's a continuous struggle that the activists here have to constantly engage with everyone, and constantly try to talk about the rights of the community. But when it comes to the government, or when it comes to religious people, I do not see a very clear picture yet, because everyone is struggling whether they should or they should not.
So, would you say there are any international groups that you've found support from in regard to this?
Yes, yes. We have been working closely with the APTN, Asia Pacific Transgender Network, and they have been actually supporting us. And from with them itself, we have managed to come up with our Trans Health Blueprint originally, and at the same time, managed to come up with our own Malaysian Transgender Health Blueprint. So with that blueprint itself, I've been actually advocating on transgender health rights in Malaysia using that blueprint itself.
Yeah, seems like there's a lot of issues in the education system with LGBT individuals who are trying to, whether that they're youth or in the college level, seems there are large levels of harassment and issues in that field. Is that something that you've been focusing on at all?
Been engaging with a lot of local universities, and even we didn't manage to go to the lower education level because we're not allowed to, but mostly to the universities to talk about LGBT issues, to talk about basically to create awareness where the community will be accepted in those places. And I've also engaged with future doctors to talk about trans health, whereby hoping that in the future these doctors will be trans-friendly doctors for the community. And not just that, I've been engaging with the Ministry of Health again to talk about an environment where it's trans-friendly, and this is related with not just HIV/AIDS but everything.
Considering the welfare department banned NGOs from distributing food for a few days, and that there was generally a lack of communication with the government, how has coronavirus changed your approach to service and advocacy?
Okay. Even though they were like, the ministry of the government was giving different kind of messages. You know, they were banning and emitting all the stuff. But for us, I actually managed to, again, engage with the public, engage with our allies that has actually contributed to our food aid program. And it actually started only in Kuala Lumpur, and then I had requests from trans community from other states. And the next thing I know, try again to fundraise. We did a fundraise approach using social media. Social media is one of my only tool that I've been using to actually gain fundraising.
Mm-hmm.
And we managed to raise around 42,000 ringgit Malaysia, and reach out to nearly to 1,000 over of community requests all over Malaysia.
Mm-hmm.
And for the community in Chowkit, where we have transgender who are sex workers, transgender who are homeless, including female sex workers that are around that area, we actually used the local media, right, to talk about this matter, and it was highlighted in some local media, and that actually attracted the public to actually engage with us, where we had tremendous support where people start to donate cooked food. And even though we are not allowed for the community to come to the center to receive those food, we actually went to their house, went to their location, and hand out those food. So we did not let whatever obstacle to stop our effort to help the community. We try our best to move around in any way we can to make sure that the community is being taken care of, especially for this pandemic situation.
Mm-hmm. I suppose I think I want to end with this last question. If there was one specific policy that you could enact at this moment in time, what would it be?
It would be legal gender recognition. For me, honestly, I would say the problem with what's happening for the trans community, specifically trans community, is because of our visibility. And we are not legally being recognized. Therefore, we had, because of not legally being recognized, our issues, it just started from the beginning till even our death. You know, from rights to health, rights to education, employment, housing, everything. So for me, if we are legally being recognized, then the main issues will be basically resolved.
Well, thank you for this time. It's been very interesting talking to you.
Thank you so much, Richard.